Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for being here on yet another episode. So happy to bring it to you. And we have another great guest in store. Yes, they come one after the other. I love the fact that people are reaching out. You can do so too at FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org. You can find the podcast anywhere you find your podcast. Spotify is my place of choice, but it could be Google and so forth. Make sure you're sharing the show. We'd love to have this shared, not just in the community, but beyond. I think the stories that come on this platform have been incredible, especially since we have changed it to more of the community-based FSHD Straight Talk podcast. It has been a positive place for sure. Not that the other show that we did format wasn't bad. It wasn't. It had its place, but the evolution of this is continued. And I think it's in the right direction. So FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org. If you have show ideas or topics you want to talk about or a question to ask me, or you want to be a guest on the show, which is how the guest today reached out and he's on the show. We immediately booked something up and here he became a guest. Today's is Aiden Mace is the guest today. Someone that is a younger person that was diagnosed in like 2021. He mentions he was a firefighter, first responder. He talks about how FSHD reared its ugly head, even in the midst of his act of working as a firefighter. That's a very interesting story for sure. His journey through the mourning process of FSHD, coming to grips with it. And it's only been recently, 3 months ago, that he's kind of told people about this. So this is fresh. And that's why I think this episode is really important, especially for those that are recently diagnosed or for anybody, honestly, but especially that part of our community, because Aiden has been right there. Like, he's not far off from when he had to shift his career, and what he has chosen and found has been remarkable to me. He still stays within the firefighting community and first responder community with the job he has, and that's with the MDA. That's amazing. He talks about that. He talks about certain things that like kind of still drive him. He still does physical work, and there's so many good nuggets of information and things to inspire you and to keep you going. I think you're really going to love Aiden's story today. One thing I want you to listen for, kind of a takeaway, is when he mentions the power in being vulnerable, the power in vulnerability. And then I'm not going to spoil it, but I want you to listen for it as the episode goes, because to me, it's a real profound way of thinking. When you share someone your story of FSHD, I've always said, like, if I walk a little odd and someone asks, like, oh, you have a limp, are you okay? Or oh, you all right? And it comes with empathy and concern. And I say either, hey, you know, hey, no, this is kind of how I walk because I have muscular dystrophy. It's kind of how it rears itself. And some people, you know, mix it up. Then, of course, we are shaking our head, MS, and so on. And then there's this explanation. But the point I'm making with this is that I still want to inform them. And in order to do that, I need to be a little vulnerable of what I have. And it doesn't bother me because it's like, well, it's the truth. And I kind of live that way more and more as I get older. Well, it's the truth. Like, if this isn't working, if this is not right, or if this is having a negative effect on yourself or people or whatnot, well, just say it. Say what it is. Let's talk about it because it's the truth. This is how I see it. And then have that conversation honestly and then work through if it's an issue, problem, et cetera. FSHD is... it's informative, but that's about as far as it goes at this point. There's no treatment, no cure. You tell people that, their face drops into a frown, and then, you know, it's terrible. And then tell them, well, donate to our cause and help us find that cure faster. And I think we are getting there for sure. And we talk even about that just a little bit with Aiden. But really more is about the shift in life, working through the process of finding out you have FSHD, the mourning process of having to change your life. The person you thought you were going to be is not anymore. So what does that look like now? And him only in his 20s, he's had to come to grips with that recently. And I think because of that, that's why this episode is so good. And I'm really grateful that he reached out and that's how he did it. So without further ado, here is the interview and the conversation with Aiden Mace. Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something everyone, every one of us can get behind. So ahead over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. As promised, this episode or conversation here is with Aiden Mace, here with us today, and I find his story interesting for sure. The little I know about it, so I'm learning him as you do, as we listen and watch this episode. And one thing that intrigued me is that he was a firefighter. That got my attention immediately, and the fact he was brave enough to email me. So, Aiden, welcome to the episode. Thanks for being here. You're now a guest. You listened to some episodes. I'm so flattered. Thank you for doing that. And now to have you as a guest, I'm really happy you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tim. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. It's really great to be able to get out and kind of share my story. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And so many others that have done it. I think before we hit record, I told Aiden, hey, this actually started to increase. It's really exciting. The old concept of the show is fine, but it seemed like I think it was a little more distant from the community. This is more involved. And I'm increasingly getting more emails and requests of either certain subjects or certain things to talk about, or people like you, Aiden, that want to be on and like share their story, thinking it'll help people. And I know it will. And today is definitely going to be one of those episodes that are going to help people. Primarily because of the shift, right, in life of what FSHD does to us or makes us do, or we have to adapt. And your story is, I have a sense, is going to be a lot about that. So let's start there. Like, you know, who are you? Where are you from? FSHD story. You've heard the episodes. You know how the first part.
Yeah. So I'm Aiden. I grew up in New England, and that's where I was a firefighter in Connecticut. I grew up around it. My father was on the job. That's kind of how we describe it, like on the job. But he did it for 25 years, and he actually unfortunately had a heart attack his last 2 years. So right as I was coming out of paramedic school and started taking civil service tests is when that happened. And I was lucky enough to test well enough that I actually got hired right as he was kind of on his way out. It was just kind of a lifelong dream to become a firefighter. And I was able to get that opportunity relatively young too. I was 21 when I finished school. So
right away. So you went from young high school life, right, getting into some people pick their path, right? It's either work or school or so forth. So you felt the draw even as a younger person that's what you knew you wanted to do because of the influence of your dad, or was there even other influences that kind of drew you that direction to be like a first responder?
Yeah, I just love the idea that we spent so much time as kids, my sister and I, at the firehouse, and just kind of culturally, you just kind of get into it. And as I started to get older, the more I kind of felt myself aligning with like the altruism of it and everything else. I really liked the medical side. So actually, it's kind of funny. I took all my like gifts or money or whatever from high school graduation. And that's how I went to EMT's class that summer was I used all that to pay for it. So
yeah. Wow, good for you. Wow. Yeah. Putting that to good use. So for all those that gave Dayton at that graduation party and so forth, well done. You helped him out.
thank you.
His like future. I think that's great. Cause this is graduation season as we record this. And my oldest is graduating high school, and like I'm kind of hoping that he does that similar thing. So
yeah,
awesome. Because to me, the first thing I think of with, I say first responders, kind of lump them together, so to speak, EMTs, right, firefighters, police, and so on. I've always found it fascinating that those are the people that run towards the danger and everybody else is running away. And to have that instinct to not, but to go help is stronger to me is always just remarkable. Because I don't know if I'm that brave, to be honest with you, Aiden. I might be like, you know, I could see myself being an EMT with, running with my gear and going, you know what? The building's on fire. I'm not really quite sure if I'm going to go over there anymore. I don't, you know, so that maybe I don't know if I would be cut out for that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I do find it interesting and fascinating that like, that's the trigger. Like that's your instinct. I mean, is that the case or am I kind of blowing that up too much like TV movie style on you?
No, it's definitely, you know, you think about it and like, oh, that sounds really cool. Like it's, maybe cool is not the right word, but you're like, this is, it's kind of where I want to be. And
yeah,
I like the idea of that because it's so, you talk about like flow states. When you're in those moments, nothing else matters besides what's happening right in front of you. And I think that gets kind of a little addicting almost because it's, it's hard to find a space where you're that focused. And you know, everyone's scared. Like there's, I think people would be lying to you if they said they weren't scared the first time they went to a fire or even the fifth time. But it's a great feeling. And, you know, knowing that you're making a positive impact is also enormous.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely the person that people want to see when they're in that probably one of their worst times of their life, perhaps. And it's more than comforting, you know, it's like people need people. And that's, like I said, it's just fascinating to me that that idea that people have that wiring in their minds to, they're scared, but they go anyway. I remember when I was a kid, I was watching this. It was a Sports Illustrated. Oh, my God, I'm going to date myself. Back in the day when you get Sports Illustrated and actually get it delivered to you, you would get a free something, right? Could be a a phone football or a VHS video. So I had the VHS and it was called Crunch Course and it was like this defensive thing and I was fascinated with it. But the line that it's stuck in my head since I was a kid to an adult really has nothing to do with sports. But one of the people that were being interviewed in this little Sports Illustrated thing talked about courage. And he said that a airman that he talked to in the war said, you know, courage is defined in his mind was you knew you couldn't go or it would be difficult to do that thing. You were scared to death to do it. So in his case, scared to death to jump out of the plane into a war zone, but you did it anyway. Like that's the courage moment. Like, I know I shouldn't really be running towards this fire or this accident but I'm going anyway. And to me, that's like the courage. And that can be for anybody. In retrospect, if you kind of see it that way, but particularly when it's your job, it's just intense to me. Like that's an everyday possibility experience, not just a one-off for the general public that doesn't have to do those types of things. And you willingly educate yourselves and do it. So the fact that you did that, right? You said EMT school, you had it and you used the word culture. You like to be around that. So there's some investment then, right? That, that you wanted to be a part of that lifestyle. Because I think some jobs, a lot of them, it's not just a job, like it's a lifestyle. Like sometimes even the clothes you wear or the way you look or what you even drive. I mean, it can be influence. You can kind of like tell people like, hey, do you do this for a living? Because you kind of look like, I get that a lot, honestly, with a coach. Like I walk around and I have like baseball type stuff on all the time. And then somebody's like, do you coach baseball? Yes, like a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, it's just on me, you know, and I like it. I'm not ashamed of that at all. And I don't think anybody should. So then how did you shift? Because then you get diagnosed with FSHD. So where did FSHD rear its ugly head within this process of life?
Yeah, so that's like the craziest story kind of. So looking back, the signs were there, but you don't realize until it happens. So when I was like 18, 19, I'd worked in a gym throughout high school, actually.
Wow.
So I was always lifting. I was always working out. I used to work out with personal trainers and everything felt relatively normal. Mm-hmm. And then around like 18, 19 is when I started to notice a decline in my upper body strength. And then I started noticing scapular winging a little bit on my right side, but I had no pain or anything. So I was like, whatever. I didn't think anything of it because I was really young. And I was so motivated to go down that career path that I just didn't, I don't want to say didn't care, but I was kind of aware of it, but it didn't, I felt like it didn't affect me that much. I kept going with that. And then I noticed like the scapular wing was getting worse and worse and worse to the point, and this is like red flag number one, I was doing push-ups, but I couldn't do like a normal push-up because of it. So I had to go real wide, but I could still like kind of do them. So I didn't, again, didn't think anything, and I was still running all the time.
Yeah.
And then when I was in the fire academy, I kind of noticed it more and more, but it was a lot of times for like the push-up stuff where mentally I'm like, I'm physically fit enough, I should be able to do this, but why am I not able to get my hands in? Why is my scapula coming out? And like, I can't lift my arm straight up without it coming out. It's, you know, and I didn't really think much of it, honestly, at the time. Because as I said, as a paramedic too, I almost thought it was like a pinched nerve in my neck. So my mentality then at my younger age was, I'll just deal with it. And then when I have the time, I'll go to a doctor and get surgery or something if it's still bothering me, but I wasn't in pain.
Yeah.
And then when the pain started coming on is when I really took a deep look. And then there was an event one night, we had a fire at work. And I remember I climbed up the ladder on the front side of the building to go break out a window. And it was on my right side, so that's the side that had the wing. I broke out the glass, and then I was trying to break the middle part of the window. It's called a sash.
Yeah.
And I was trying to break that out, and it was just like just bouncing the tool off the window. And I could just feel my whole like right side just kind of buckling under it.
Yeah.
So it took me an exorbitantly long time to like break this thing. I eventually did it.
but longer than you wanted it to. Right?
Yeah. And that's what really triggered me to be like, let's pursue treatment here, because that was, you know, to me that became unignorable at that point.
Yeah, then it's affecting not only just your personal workout routine, right? That I think that affects a lot of us. And then, okay, you're right. Like, it's not painful. Maybe I'll just need a surgery. But the fact that for your life, you know, what you do for a living and someone else's life could be on the line, like breaking that window or anything else, you know, taking too long, I'd imagine that kind of weighed heavily on you. Like, wait a minute, if I can't do this the way I should. So then you just went to a doctor immediately. Like, how did that process go?
Yeah, so that was lengthy. I'll just put it that way. So I went to an orthopedist, and he was like, I've seen this once in my 30-year career. And I was like, great. Well, what was it? And he was like, I don't know. I had to send it somewhere else. I was like, okay, that's a good start. So,
and they just never came back. Yeah.
So I did that. I did TT for like 8 weeks, which did nothing. And then I went to a neurologist, and I did a few needle EMGs, which was a great time. If you ever had them, they're awesome. And then I had a few MRIs, and then I went back to him. And this is like that whole span had taken 5-6 months.
Wow.
So for context, so that was June 2021 that fire happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like October-ish, September, October, that I was sitting in his office again. So maybe not quite 6 months, but he referred me up to Boston to Mass General. And he was like, there's a guy there that teaches at Harvard, and he's the guy to go to. He'll know what this is. Just go up there. I was like, okay. So I call, make an appointment. And at this point, I tell my dad about it. He was like, I want to go with you. I mean, this is strange. Like, you don't go up there all the time for anything, you know? So
yeah, that's kind of a big deal at this point.
Yeah.
But then were you anxious then at that point? I mean, this is kind of like, this isn't just general doctors anymore. Now you're working, you know, you're going into the specialist, the very unique type positions now.
Yeah. So it's so funny looking back at it. I was still so convinced that it was like, I'm just going to get a nerve graft and like move on with my life. Like, I was still so like just convinced on that. And at the time, by then, this was like November. So I think I was 24. Mm-hmm. We go up there, the surgeon comes in the room, and he's like, amazing guy. I won't say his name, but he was just a great, great guy. He comes in and he does like some tests, and he does this cool thing where like he puts his hand on your chest and your hand on your back where your scapula is, and he's like pushes against it, and he goes, lift your arm up. And I'm like able to do it.
Yeah.
For the first time in years. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this guy fixed it. And he goes, yeah. So like, when did you get diagnosed with FSHD? And I looked at him, I'm like, what is that? And he goes, Okay, hang on. I'll be right back. I gotta go.
Yeah.
He said, let me go get a few things. I'll be right back. Whatever you do, do not look it up on your phone. We'll talk about it when we come back. I don't even think that the door wasn't even closed, and I was already on WebMD.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Like,
sure. Dr. Google. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, what is this? And then my dad and I look at each other like, what are we?
Wow.
Is this for real? Like, this can't be, like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And he came back in and broke it all down, like what the phenotype is, symptom, like everything. And he had said that the only way to do it was genetic testing for sure. But that the surgery, the scapulothoracic fusion,
yeah,
would be the best case for stability and stuff. And my whole thing was, I was like, well, can I go back to work if I do that? I like immediately in full blown denial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I went ahead and did that, scheduled it that day. I did that in February, which had its own complications, but I went ahead and did the fusion on the right side.
So you jumped, it sounded like, really fast from being talked about this, you know, genetic disease. I'm sure they gave you all the details, which probably freaked you out more. You looked up it on your phone, WebMD, Dr. Google, and so forth. So a lot of like holy crap type thoughts, I'd imagine, are happening. So were you like in the state of, and I'm going to speak like a typical male here, I think a lot of us guys like to fix things. Like, what's the fix? What's the solution? Did you think then like the scap, as you mentioned, was like the fix and then you just move on? Or did you think it was going to go further, you know, worsening? I mean, did you think that there was more to come, I guess, you know, despite having the surgery?
Yes. So he was pretty transparent about it. He's like, it seems like you still have a pretty good amount of muscle mass, but these things are very unpredictable. He's like, you don't have a trap on that side. Your serratus, your lat, your pec. He's like, that whole side is decimated. There's nothing there. Because you could always, when I was a big runner, like you could always see all my ribs, which I guess he's like looking back, but that's kind of a red flag because I had no chest muscle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of was in that fix-it mindset, but having had the medical background of being a paramedic at that point for like 5 years, I understood exactly what a muscle wasting disease kind of looks like. And then the more I started reading it, and the more like PubMed articles I read, it became more apparent that I was like, oh, okay, there is no cure, and there's no rhyme or reason for what's going to happen. It's just going to happen. And I think that is what triggered the whole denial thing, because it's, you know, I think like we kind of talked about a little earlier, but that rug gets pulled out from under you.
Yeah.
And you just kind of scramble a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, you think, as you were saying, you were going to be first responder, a firefighter. You were in the act of the job itself, so you were living it. You were that guy that you destined yourself to be, put it into action, which is awesome. A lot of people can't do that in general without a muscle-wasting disease. And then to come to find that, okay, now you have this, the surgery. When then was the moment then that you thought, okay, this career choice isn't going to work?
So that's a great question. So really, it occurred several times over the course of a year. And I say that because there was the initial like insult of being diagnosed and all that stuff and taking all that. And consciously, you know, like, I can't do this forever now. Like, you know, it's there.
There's
at the time I, yeah, but at the time I still felt okay. Like, I always had wicked neck and back pain. And I just figured that was because I was probably not lifting things smart or whatever. But now that I had a firm answer as to why that was and what is causing that, that's really when I was like, okay, I need to like reevaluate things. And rather than say exactly what's going on, I think I just hid it behind, oh, you know, I just want to go try to figure something else out or go back to school. I was never really honest with people about like, that's why I needed to like change careers. So I actually like rehabbed enough and got cleared to come back. And when it was when I came back, I had just gotten promoted. I was a driver.
Okay.
So I was, this is probably, I don't know, I think it was that winter. So like fall, winter, but like a year and a half ago. When that winter came around, because I had just been kind of like getting through and telling myself it was fine and I could take my time and figure things out. When that winter came around in New England, the cold, and everything else. And I think I also had a period of symptom acceleration. It got so bad that I went through that. My day off, I remember thinking about buying Velcro shoes because my back would hurt so bad that I didn't want to tie my shoes. And that, I remember that day, it was like a Tuesday in January. I just remember sitting on the edge of my couch and being like, I, regardless of how this goes, I just can't do this anymore. And that was like brutal to admit, but I just remember thinking it out loud, like, I cannot do this anymore. Like, this is not good for anyone. And then that's when it really started to sink in that I just need to peel the Band-Aid, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Did that career choice kind of define who you were a little bit?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I talked about it like when I was in high school and I had a high school teacher write in my yearbook, like, you're on a very noble path and all this stuff, and talking about like being a fireman. And it just was, you know, the grieving process. And I think that like living with this disease is a constant grieving process. The grieving process with that was almost as bad as being diagnosed too. I mean, they're happening in tandem, but working through both of them was really difficult.
Yeah. And that's a touch point, I guess, I wanted to hit, because there's nothing wrong, you know, with that it being part of your life to that degree. We talked just about that. Like, it's, if it defines you, it defines you. You know, that's the career you wanted. You said sometimes it's just, it's in you. So to have all that, I guess, you know, chips in the pile, like, hey, this is it. I'm being this types of person. I have to shift. What then did you decide to shift to? I mean, there must have been some type of point where you settled into the idea the best you could and then went, okay, now what's the plan? Because somebody that got into the situation and the line of work that you did at such a young age, you clearly had a, I'm going to do this, and then I do this, and I do this, and here's my goal. So I can only imagine that that part of your mind didn't turn off. It just re-engaged and went, okay, so then that means I have to do this and this to do something else. Is that kind of how it went?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of analysis paralysis type thing going on.
Sure. Like, oh, yeah.
Could do this, and simultaneously choosing nothing. So, so eventually, what, last spring, I had an opportunity to do something else, like paramedic wise. Mm-hmm. And I semi foolishly thought that that would be easier on me physically. But it was really like one of the first opportunities I had to like branch out that felt stable-ish. So I took that and left. But I think the reality was I was leaving because of what was happening to me physically. Mm-hmm. I would describe it as a period of acceleration from like last winter until even now, to be honest with you. And I was thinking about that yesterday before the show. I was like, what has really gone on this last year? It's one of those things you think about. You're like, all right, that's gotten worse. But I went out and did that, and it just was not physically easier at all. And that's,
this isn't it.
Yeah. And that's when I decided to take a few months of just doing nothing, which is something I had never done in my entire life. And honestly, it was more challenging than anything, because I was really forcing myself to like sit in my thoughts and figure things out. And then ultimately I was able to figure out a really kind of a almost kismet opportunity. But yeah, it was tough for sure. But I think the butterfly effect of that was really great.
And now you currently, I saw you, MDA, account manager, firefighter, partnership.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I know that organization, fantastic organization, and that you're involved with them, but what does the rest mean?
So I had, there's a longstanding relationship there. Mm-hmm. And when I was a firefighter, Phil LeBoot and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Growing up, my dad had always done that. And so there's like pictures of me as a kid wearing t-shirts. I had reached out when I first got diagnosed because I realized that I was in a very, very unique position. So I reached out and had done some stuff, some speaking and trying to work with some other departments. And then this past November, I was really thinking when I was in that space of I have some time off, like what does Aiden want to do? What do I want to do? And I really wanted to do some advocacy, and I really wanted to be in a space where I could have conversations like this and be open and not feel like I have to hide things and like try to engage with the community more. I had looked online and I saw the position was open, and that's how I applied and everything kind of worked out. Wow. So yeah, so presently I still work in fire departments while also being involved in the neuromuscular disease space.
That sounds like the fit for you.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
And you just happen to look and it's open.
Yeah, that was it was interesting. That was on Thanksgiving Day, I happened to look and find it. So it was really, I mean, I think kismet is like the best way to describe it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I think it was the process that you gave yourself to think about those shifts and think about what's my direction, the plan going forward. I can only imagine when you saw, however you saw the post for that, I'm sure your brain and your heart went, holy cow, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Like I can't apply fast enough.
Right? it's so funny. I actually applied on my phone because I had my computer with me and I was like, I need to do this right now.
Yes.
But that was something that I had thought about years ago. So when that fire happened, that was 2021. I got formally diagnosed because I waited forever to do the genetic testing because I couldn't wrap my mind around accepting it numerically. Like having a tangible thing that says you have it.
Yeah.
So I didn't do that for like a year. And then that's when I kind of started doing everything else. So I have been thinking about that for years because I was like, already a pretty standard connection. It'd be really great to like be able to do something like that. So yeah, to have it all work out was just really, really, really pretty great moment for me. And I'm just super stoked. So
yeah. Yeah. That's phenomenal. It sounds like that's right in your wheelhouse. So then what does your average day look like when you're being Aiden?
Average day, like just in general.
Yeah, like, I guess average day of like your work day. Right. I mean, we just heard a little bit about you running towards fires and breaking windows. And then now what does it look like?
A lot less of that, but I get to interact with a lot of fire departments and help pre-plan those events. So that's basically kind of
that's great.
The gist of that. But yeah, no, it's still great to be able to interact in the community because being able to talk to firefighters and stuff is just, I don't know, it feels like I'm still involved.
Right. You're still in the culture, right? You're still part of that community. And I'm sure they accept you just the same because you lived it. Like you were that guy, you went through that process. I'm sure it's kind of a brotherhood, no offense to the female firefighters, first responders. It is a brother sisterhood, I'm sure, feeling when you walk into those firehouses and so forth. And that's a pretty good feeling. At least you feel like you're still connected.
Yeah, 100%. No, it's incredible. And the reception's been really great too. So,
and I think that's like what a lot of people look for. Like if you're doing something for a living that you had passion for, I know some people have just a job and then they can make this shift, but even still, it's still something that you've trained yourself to do, probably got pretty good at it. And then all of a sudden you can't. And then now what do you do? And you talked about mourning process and I totally agree. When I was diagnosed, one of the first people I told was my boss because she had or has MS and it was pretty pronounced, like physically it manifested itself in her. And I remember going back to work and kind of like just sitting at my desk and she knew I was going to the doctor and she kind of looked at me and she goes, how'd it go? I was like, I think I just gave her like this muscle, giving her this like nasty, stoic, like blank look. And she immediately closed my office door and goes, okay, what's going on? And to have her say, you're going to mourn. That was one of the first things she said because she knew it. She knew exactly what she coped with her diagnosis of MS. The life you thought you're going to have is not going to be. It's going to be something else now. And to come up to that realization is difficult and everybody has to get there in their own way. But I don't know if I've ever totally come to grips with that though. I think I don't know if it's denial or if it's the, no, I think I can still do something like that anyway. You know what I mean? And I kind of use like the whole baseball world a little bit. Like, no, I can still hit a fun go ground ball to some kids like without falling over. Yeah. Yeah, why not? So yeah. It's, you know, there's some aspects of myself where I push through like total denial, like, no, I'm still going to do this anyway. And then there's other parts where you have to shift completely. You have, it sounds like a little bit of mix of both. But for the mental side of it, as we record this being Mental Health Awareness Month of May, I think we're going to air this here in June, but nonetheless, it's still important no matter what month it is. So for you, the physical aspect we talked about, then how was coping with the mental side, the mental health side of FSHD?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, sometimes it's almost harder because the physical pain, I don't know if it's just me. I'm pretty good at being able to just internalize that and deal with it. Most days, like it's, yeah, like I said, things have been getting a little bit harder. But I think it's just those subtle things. Like the other day, I was getting fitted for a suit for my buddy's wedding. And when they measured my chest, it's like I lost 4 inches off my chest in the last 3 years. So it's just things like that where, you know, I got back in my car and you just stare off and like, it's so like when it becomes tangible is when it becomes hard. And I think coping is brutal because, you know, you look at those like mental health checklists. I was recently, I was somewhere and they were talking about that. And there's checklists of, hey, check in on somebody if they display all of these things. Yeah. And I was standing in the back of the room looking at it. And in my head, I was like, well, for those first 2 years, I checked every single box. Like I was withdrawn, whatever, all of those. And I just couldn't accept it. And it's almost, you know, that transition point is so hard where you're just constantly questioning, like, well, what is the point? You know, if I thought I was going to have a 25-year career doing this,
yeah,
and now I can't do that. And my thought process went from, how do I set myself up for the next 10 years of my career to, oh, you know, I hope I can walk in 10 years. It's, you know, it's almost like, well, what's the point? I mean, I was just constantly stuck on that. And I think I just didn't see a lot of value in things for a very long time. And it was just brutal. And then as you end your, when you're in those plateau stages, it's like, okay, like, yeah, my neck hurts, my back hurts. This shoulder's starting to go, whatever. It's okay. But then when you feel something, I feel like, and I don't know how it is for you, and I'm curious to know, but like, I feel like I feel something for a few months. And then all of a sudden I'll stop and check in and be like, why is that? You know, like recently,
yeah,
I had this like this thing with I noticed my leg started shaking when I do like extensions at the gym, and I noticed that if I start walking too long, I get like kind of a little bit of like a hitch almost in my step.
Yeah, a little hitch in your giddy up. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't notice it because you just think like, ah, I just must have tweaked something, and then it seems like it's 4 months later that you're like, oh no, that's been going on for a long time, and that's because of this. And that's that mental load where you're just constantly like, now you have to sit there and grieve that. Like, it's a constant point of grieving because now you're like, well, this is something new that I have to deal with. And then what's it going to be next? You know?
Right. It's just rears its ugly head again and then again and again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is like completely, not completely unrelated. I just thought of it, but my eyelids always like kind of stay up when I sleep. And
okay,
that's part of it, you know. Sure.
Yeah.
When I first started reading about it, a lot of things I was reading was saying that like some people lose their ability to smile from the facial muscles.
Yeah.
So within like 2 months of my surgery, I was like, I'm doing Invisalign because while I still can, I am gonna absolutely
straighten like, those things. Right?
Yeah. So
good for you for thinking that, right? Like, hey, in case it attacks this, I'm going to fix the grill, as they say. Oh, that's awesome. That's funny. Oh man. No, I totally get it. Cause like I talk a lot about the disease, or I guess it more sprinkles within conversations. Not maybe talk a lot about it, but it comes up often, obviously, with my wife, and she sees me all the time, and she's gotten a front row seat to how I used to look, to how I am, and like so on. Sometimes I say, you know, I almost say like, she might as well have it with me sometimes, you know, because she's watching or hovering and like, is he going to be able to change that light bulb above his head? Or do I have to dive in on that one? Like I can sense her, you know, kind of being in the area in case I'm needed, you know, for help, in case I need some help there. But the thing that I'll tell her is like, I think there's a couple times I saw, for whatever reason, a video of me walking. Like I think it was when I was filming a kid's like baseball stuff, and I set the camera up, and then I walk by the camera to go to where I'm going to throw him the ball or whatnot. And as I walk by the camera, and I'm showing my wife like this film, like, hey, you should see this guy swing. And as I walk by that, you know, the camera, I stop and I look at her. I go, do I walk like that? And she's like, yeah, that's you. I go, that is horrible. I mean, I said, it's like my arms aren't even moving. I'm like, that's how I look. And she's like, yeah. She goes, there's really nothing wrong with it. I go, yeah, there is. I'm like, this stupid disease. I said, I'm like, I have like no, I don't know how to describe it. Like almost like, yeah, like your shoulders are like rigid. And I'm like,
yeah.
She goes, well, how do you think you walk? And I said, like everybody else. Right? Like I see, and then I'll kind of joke, like we watch sports or something. I'm like, I think I look just like that athlete in that baseball uniform when I'm in my coach gear. She goes, yeah, you don't. Like, okay. You know, and I'm glad that she gives me that sense of reality check with a little bit of humor. But you're right. It's this sense of like this, I believe I am, maybe it's denial. Like I look like this or I act like this or I walk like this, et cetera, physically. But then it rears its ugly head that no, you don't. You are different, and this is how. You used the term plateaus. You said, you know, like you hit so far, and then, and my doctor told me at my diagnosis, which did not make it easier to hear, he goes, you're going to have stair falls, is what he called it. So he said, you'll be good, and then it'll drop. It'll be good, it'll drop, and so on. He goes, the older you get, the quicker the stair falls, and the more dramatic they'll become. Oh, he says, your FSHD is like, goes, it's almost like a way of aging faster. So he's like, you'll have pain and things that only like a 65-year-old person will have, or a 70-year-old, and you're like in your 50s or 40s. I'm like, oh my gosh. And she goes, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, that's how it goes. But then here's what you can do to combat it. And he was very more progressive in the, instead of back in the day, they'd say, all right, don't do anything, right? Right. Don't lift too much. He would say, keep exercising best you can, right? Don't lift a ton of heavy weight. Do more reps, lighter weight. Get into yoga. Find things that stretch your body instead of strengthen and so forth. Okay. But that still weighs on your mental, you know, side to have to cope and do it. Something that you said, but it's like, why bother? You know, you said, I think of that all the time. Like when I want to, okay, go to the gym or do something physical. There is a sense of me when I'm in the midst of doing that exercise. What the hell does this matter? Like, what is this really doing? Right. I'm not going to see a change. You know, is this just like building another brick on my wall to keep it at bay just a little longer? Is that the goal? It's like, have you stayed active than Aiden? Like, have you continued to do some workouts and things? It sounds like that's a yes, right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So I think I've always been the person that when someone says, like, and this sounds cliche, when someone says, I don't think that you can do that. There's no way you can do that. I was always like, all right, well, watch this, you know, like, sure, even if I fall short, I'm going to go try it. So I still work out all the time. And I did agree with you. Sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around that. I guess I physically peaked at 17 years old when I worked in a gym, but you know,
oh my God.
But wow. I still go there and I still try to do things. And I do, because one of the things I remember reading in the doctor's office when I first got like diagnosed was the like foot drop and losing the ability to go upstairs. So I do the Stairmaster like 5 days a week, and not because I like it or because I enjoy it. I do it more so because if I ever lose the ability to do it, I want to be able to look back and say that I did it the most that I possibly can, which I guess is like kind of ridiculous because it's just a revolving staircase to nowhere. But which I True. Guess is a metaphor, True. But you know, I constantly try to do things like that because I just don't want to ever look back and say, I wish I did more while I could have. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely those days, it's almost like jealousy where you see other people like effortlessly doing something and you know that that's not going to be the case for you. And sometimes that's hard to wrap your mind around where you're like, I'm doing the best I can, but it just doesn't, show. But I think it's so important to keep moving and keep doing things because otherwise you just kind of become trapped in your own mind about it, you know?
Yeah, you're right. And you mentioned, yeah, foot drop. Yeah, trust me, that sucks. I have it in my left foot. It's annoying. It's annoying. And we were walking, taking a walk with my wife, and we were walking the dog, and I'm like, and I stopped, and she went, "What's the matter?" And I started to walk again, and I stopped. She goes, what are you doing? I go, "I'm listening for something." And she goes, "Okay." And she's listening. And then I started walking. I'm like, "Do you hear that?" And she, when I walk, and she goes, "No." I'm like, "My left foot is slapping on the ground." And I started noticing, you know, that heavy, like, lack of control. And that was before it got more pronounced. And I went, I swore, like, shit, there it is. A damn thing is coming back in now the foot. Now I'm going to, okay, how am I going to deal with this? And then you get the fear, like, what if it happens to my right? Oh my gosh, great, here we go, you know? And yes, I wear the AFO from time to time. It's a pain. It doesn't feel great. It does help for sure. Stability, etc. But it ain't cool to look at wearing shorts with an AFO, dude. Like, it's not, that's not what you want to do. But what other choice do you have? So it manifests, you're right. It like keeps going in different parts of your body. Where are you currently then, Aiden? Like, where is it affecting you now where you're like, it's like the latest, greatest place, right? That it's like attacking.
So I'm so glad you asked, because when I was preparing for this, I just started writing a list, because I didn't want to forget anything, because this, like I said, this last year has been kind of crazy. So it was like, we'll start at the face, I guess. So my eyelids always stay open, like when I sleep, which absolutely freaks people out.
I'm not going to deny that either. I'm like,
it's a funny joke to play on some people that don't know, I guess, if you have a sense of humor, but that always happens. So my eyes burn when I wake up. This last 6 months, at first I thought that it was like some sort of injury. I got like really bad TMJ in my jaw. So my jaw just, like, every time I go to like eat, I can't take huge bites. My jaw just pops and clicks and like just all sorts of stuff. And then I started doing some research, and I was like, oh, that's attributed to the FSHD. That's neat. Add that to the list. I don't know if you can kind of see that camera. So my right shoulder here was the one that's fused. Mm-hmm. So it always looks like I'm just kind of like, slouched or something.
Yeah.
My pecs, I have like no pecs on my right side, especially my left side is starting to go. I had the winging on my right side that I had the fusion. So I have no trap over there. And then it's starting to wing on the left side. My neck hurts because now I have like basically half the support system holding my head up. And then my lower back has been like really killing me lately. Like that's been one of the ones that's been hard. And I think that's kind of causing the step thing mostly. I can't be upright for more than like an hour. Because it just, I have to sit down, even if it's just for 2 minutes, or otherwise it's like I start cracking my back, and that gets strange. I golf a lot too, but I've noticed, I used to really go play like 18 holes, like it was nothing. And now by the time I hit like the 10th hole, it's like, I can't, my swing starts getting shorter. I have to like sit down more, and you know, it's just, those are the things that I've noticed. But symptom wise, those are the biggest things that I've noticed.
I totally hear you on the golf thing. I think that's how I use a little bit of like, where's my progression or degression, I guess, at, is that it goes golf season to golf season for me.
Yeah.
My wife likes golf a lot too. And so it's something we do together, which is awesome. And I'm so glad that she's into it. And she's only been in it for like about 5 years, maybe. And so she said it yesterday. Hey, we should go to the range, you know, today, the day that we're recording this. I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's see how far I can hit it. Can I even hit it? How does it feel when I swing? Like I use it as almost a checkpoint, because I'm thinking to myself, because one of the things that bothered me the most is if it takes golf away from me too, oh my God, then what am I going to do? Like, that's like the last real physical thing that's left. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I even looked and saw on, like, I don't know, Facebook, social media, whatnot. There was this guy that had a golf driver. You'll appreciate this, Aiden. He had a golf driver, right? And he lined it up to the ball, and he didn't swing. He just hit a button on the golf.
Oh, yeah.
And a little, like, hammer thing came out and hit it. I'm like, all right, there's hope.
There we go. Yeah.
So I thought, well, at least I could have that as a driver, right? And then the short game, as long as you can swing it. So, yeah, it's like you're looking for adaptions so you can keep going.
Did you ever hear of the PGA golfer that has FSHD?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
He is an interesting man, I've heard.
Yeah, interesting.
But I've tried to get him on this show, this like platform, and I have been unsuccessful. So if you know him, do you know him or no?
I don't know him, no. I just remember, so he was at the Travelers in Connecticut right after he got diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, maybe like right after he come out with it. I don't know when he was diagnosed, but it was right after I had gotten diagnosed.
Okay.
Or like within 7 months of that. So I was like, maybe I should go over there. But I'm like, if I get a high five from what am I going to say? Like, hey, I have it too. And then we just be like, cool.
Yeah. Now what?
Now what? Yeah. Hey, so yeah. I didn't do that. But
you should just wear a t-shirt that says I have FSHD. Yeah. You know what else would know what that is? Maybe you and the whole crowd. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I wish I could get him on, or when I've had Chris Carino on, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets. I'm like, I go fanboy on that guy because of the whole radio thing. I think his voice doing play-by-play is hard. He has FSHD severely, unfortunately, now. And it's like what he has to go through to like continue to do his job, I find is like super heroic. The fact that his voice is like still awesome, right? And I get it. Like if I saw somebody like that, I mean, what do I do? Walk out and go, hey, man, I have FSHD. And I've been actually kind of called out. There was like someone on social media was talking about a baseball player that had some issues with his scap. And he actually showed a video of like this like player. And he was asking for help. Hey, coaches, does anybody know how I can fix this or this? I sent him like a side message and said, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a little concerned because what I can see is some winging of his scap and this and this and this. I would just maybe take him to, you know, I said like this physician kind of walked through us. Dude, the guy berated me back. Like, you're crazy. It's just a swing. I'm like, whoa. Like, I never thought that reaction, right? So, like, sometimes, like, we kind of bring out negative things being because you're going to tell someone, hey, you might have this terrible disease. You know, and I never thought of it that way. I always thought, like, oh, I'm going to help this person out. So, yeah, I can imagine if you went right up to him, like, would he accept you in, like, an FSHD brother? Or he'd be like, dude, I don't want to be, you know, bothered with the whole FSHD thing. Because, like, yeah, I can't quite figure him out. I know he's trying different, unique ways of treating himself. And if he thinks it works, great. I have not heard it does, but he would be an interesting guest.
I mean, that's how I was at first too. I was very much like, really? I didn't want to talk about it or do anything.
Oh, sure.
It, you know, and it was recently, up until like 3 months ago, that I would even freely admit that I have a disability. You know, like it was up and like it just. That stage of denial I was hung up on for so long, and now I'm finally in acceptance, I guess. But yeah, it takes so long just to even get to that point. But I think the best thing, and like if anybody is listening and questioning whether they should reach out and like talk to other people with it, 1000% please do it, because that is just so cool to be able to talk to somebody else. It's like, oh yeah, did this happen yet? And you're like, no. And then you're like,
right.
When did that, you know, and like you just have those conversations like this where I feel like you get so much out of it.
Yeah, it's you get that kind of kinship or some type of feedback from someone else that has it. Have you gone to any chapter meetings or things like that? Like if it's FSHD Society related or any other like group that have people with a similar or same disease?
Yeah, it's funny. I know we talked about it earlier, but I right after I got diagnosed, I went to go join one of those Zoom meetings, and I was very clearly still in that stage. Like I don't want to talk about it. And I really just kind of wanted to like, I was like, all right, let me go see, you know, because it's not like you walk down the street and meet people with FSHD ever. So I remember I logged on and they're like going around the room, like everyone's introducing themselves. And right before it came to me, I panicked and just left. And that wasn't like any fault of anything other than myself not being able to talk about it yet. But I would certainly be open to it now. I think that it's a great avenue to be able to have that camaraderie in a sense of, you know, everyone's kind of experiencing the same, same things. And it's tough too, because sometimes people think you look so, I don't want to say normal, but like people see you standing there and objectively think that like, it's okay. So when you say these things, I think it's not intentionally hurtful, but it feels it because they're like, oh, you're fine. You're fine. You know, like,
yeah,
I read this, you're fine. And sometimes you just want people to be like, no, this sucks. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
you just want people to say that, and then you're like, yeah, it does. All right, cool. Let's move on. You know, and
Right.
I don't.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You want them to say, like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. It is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've
Right.
had people ask me,
Yeah.
like I would like stumble or something, and they're like, oh, you okay? Do you slip on something? I'll look right at them, even if it's a total stranger. No, I have muscular dystrophy. Like I totally like just absolutely
Yeah.
slapped them in the face. They were not expecting that answer. And like when I've, you know, my wife will sometimes will say, well, why do you say it like that? I go, what else am I going to say? I'm like, that is it.
Yeah.
Like, I did not slip on something. My dumb left foot caught because it's got drop foot. I'm not wearing the AFO and almost down goes Tim. That's just how it is. And like, sometimes, yeah, you want the reality back to you, you know, of like, that sucks, this and this. And do you have you received then the question where it's kind of phrased in a little different tone, Aiden, like, so Aiden, how are you doing? Like when they kind of soften the tone, they drag the how you're doing out a little bit. They're not really asking how you doing. Like, hey, how's your day? No, they're like,
Yeah.
how's your FSHD is really what they're asking.
I think a couple times. You know, that's a little bit softer, and I think that you know that like it's they're doing the therapist talk thing, but
Right. Yeah.
yeah, I guess it depends on like who's saying it sometimes, like what my response is, but usually I just kind of leave it like, yeah, it's doing what it does, and I'm just trying to keep going is my flat response.
Yeah.
But if it's somebody that like really is involved in those, I'll be like, yeah, listen, like I was on a treadmill for 30 minutes yesterday, and then I was, you know, hobbled my way out of the gym and sat in my car with a heated seat on when it's 90 degrees out, you know. So I think it depends, but
Depends on your audience. That makes sense.
yeah.
No, this has been awesome. I swear we could probably do this for like all day. But
For sure.
yeah, and then we can definitely have you on like in the future. I say this to guests all the time. Like this is like a part of your life you're at now. You know, where are you going to be in a year or 2 years? And like I would love to get people to come back. Like where are they now to some degree? But for you've kind of come to grips. You've mentioned it just within the last 3 months, saying more to people, I have this. So I think this last question I have for you is like pretty, I'm hoping it's pretty spot on. Like what is then the advice you would give someone that's recently diagnosed? I think you kind of alluded to it, like being more outwardly about it, but if they were right in front of you and said, man, I was just diagnosed with FSHD and maybe they don't even know you have it. Maybe they do, but what advice would you give that person?
That's a great question. I think I would really implore them to work through it at their own pace. There's no right or wrong answer to however you want to do it. As long as you're taking care of yourself first. You know, it's kind of like it's our battle to fight, and it's our journey to take. So there's no right or wrong way. I think that there's a lot of power in engaging a community and engaging people around you. But it's up to you to decide how you do that and what form you want to do that in. But there's a lot of power in vulnerability, and there's a lot of power in being able to admit and accept what's going on with you. So I would just say to take things as they come and stay positive and try to engage everyone. And if you have one person that you can talk to about it, cling to them and just try to get through it and hopefully get to a point of acceptance. But there's no time frame on that. You can take as long or as little as you need to get there.
But get there, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can't live in that space of this isn't happening forever, because unfortunately the disease will catch up to you at some point
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
tell you it's still there.
You're like, hello, I'm right here. Yeah. That's,
Yeah.
yeah. We kind of treat FSHD like a bad roommate around here.
Yeah.
Like it makes me fall down, you know, and all this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. But Aiden, this has been awesome. I'm so glad that you reached out and we had this conversation. I'm not lying. I'd love to have you back on, in the future to kind of see where you're at and the stages of your life and like how, working with firefighters is going. I love the fact that you're still within that community. The way you tell the story of being a part of that culture, you can tell it's a part of you. And I'm glad that that hasn't had to change. I think that's awesome. I think that's probably helped with your mental healing as well. Best you can say healing, right? To some degree, it's always something
Right.
that we work through, but I really appreciate you being on. Thanks for joining us, and it's It's been amazing. Great, great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Jim, for having me. And thanks everyone for listening. But I really appreciate it. I'd love to come back sometime too.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Aiden. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Aiden. Bye.
So that is Aiden Mace. I pause because there's a lot of things that kind of come out with that conversation for me, a lot of takeaways. The fact of like working out, what's the point? He mentioned that. What something that really stuck out towards the end there was the power and vulnerability. There's power in vulnerability. When I think about that, I think that's very accurate. I never thought of it that way, but when I tell someone that this is what I have, this is what I deal with, this is what I cope with, I'm not trying to do it because I want to have this pity fest or something like that. It's just like, I just think it's informative. That's how I see it. But I am being vulnerable when I say it. And most times the response is some degree of positive response. You know, maybe there's some sympathy, of course, in there. I mean, we're humans, and some empathy. There's nothing wrong with that. But then there's also like more questions about it. What does that mean? And this and this. And then it becomes slightly clinical conversation led to, you know, well, then what does that mean? And so forth. And there is a doom and gloom to it, right? The doom and gloom diagnosis that a lot of us have had is the same kind of thing you have to share with someone that asks about what you have. You know, there's no treatment. There's no cure right now. And we can add that now. We can say right now. We've talked about treatments, cures on the horizon. We hope those that pray for it. And I believe it is there. I think it's on the horizon, if not for my generation, maybe for Aiden's or younger for sure. And when that day comes, we will celebrate probably like you would not believe, right? But between that, you know, now and then, it's like, I think we still have to inform people. We still have to tell people what we have. We still have to have that power of vulnerability happen. And I think Aiden has come to grips in showing that more. And the fact that he is still in the line of work he's in, working with first responders and firefighters, what a great niche job position career move that is for him. We're not all fortunate for that. I'll always say, like, I still don't know if I have a career. I love podcasting. I wish I could do this all the time, to be honest with you. I think conversations with people are fascinating. I enjoy them. I want to always hear from people and like what they're going through in their life. I actually am interested. I don't ask the question, how are you doing? And don't care what your answer is. Like, I want to know. I find it interesting. And then sometimes like you get information from people of how their life is to help you cope with your own. And it's almost like I'm trying to coach myself, right? So if you can find that niche, if you can find that thing that has an essence of maybe the person you thought you were going to be, what you're going to do for a living in your life, and you can still do that, kudos. That's not always fortunate for everybody. So then you still have to make sure you're concentrating on the mental health aspect. Make sure you have a good, strong circle around you. As my brother would have said, have a good tribe of people that got you, right? That are watching out for you. I know I'm only through a podcast speakers if you're listening, or through YouTube if you're watching and all that, but you can, I'm here as some type of vessel. If you want to email, start there. We can conversate. We can turn into a call for sure if you want to talk about it. Love to even have you on a guest if you're like Aiden and like so brave to do so. Sharing my email here is fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. So yeah, please reach out. Don't hesitate. I really thank Aiden for being on here. Those that want to be, please do. Please listen to past episodes. Follow the show. If you can rate it, like it, share it like crazy. I really need people to find it. Not because I want them to hear me talk, it was because I want them to listen to others speak about their story and share it. I think it's going to make a difference in a positive way, and not a false positive way. I think in a true positive way to help people. And in order to do that, I need you. I need you to spread it out into the FSHD community and beyond. It doesn't just have to be through FSHD channels. Let's spread this out. These stories can help people of a lot of walks of life, in my opinion, not just in the FSHD community. So I think it needs to be going beyond the community space. Would be amazing. And I need your help to do that. So thank you again, Aiden, for joining us. Without that, right, we don't have a show. If you want to be on the show, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org is the best way to get in touch with me. And then we can go from there. We've had excellent responses from people. A lot of emails have come through, people interested in doing this and being on the show. So keep those coming. I really would love to hear from you. So thanks again for listening and watching. This has been FSHD Straight Talk. Take care.